Radio.
Maybe we should start now. I don't want to talk about Andy during this.
You keep the stand?
No, I fucking forgot it.
But, don't worry about it.
Is it one of the? Is that good for the neck like that?
No.
You're a musician.
I'm okay with it.
It's not yours.
Not yours either.
Yeah, it is. It's totally
not anymore.
Mine. Oh, jeez. I guess, yeah.
I got it.
All's
it's
fair.
Really long. Look at this headstock. It's like
I know.
A torso of a child.
I put the headphones on. I don't know if you want to. I just
feel more official.
Yeah, I feel more official that way. I might turn on the.
Hello.
Turn it up.
Hello.
Can you hear?
Butte, Montana. Hello.
Can you hear yourself?
A little bit.
Want more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's
that?
Hey.
Ooh.
Is that
good?
It's nice.
Yeah. Welcome to Sing Songers.
Thank you.
I get professional.
I don't mind.
This is Johnny Polonsky with me.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Are you asking the people at home or me?
Just in general.
All right. Well, because I could give you a really long answer.
I don't want to know.
Oh, Jesus.
Just rhetorical.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Right. How you doing?
How you doing? What you got?
I got vodka. Do you want any?
No, I'm good.
No, you don't drink.
Not anymore. I quit.
Yeah. How does that help your songwriting? Let's get right into it.
Well, I don't know. I just, to me, it's just a distraction. I just had to clear a bunch of things out, you know.
Yeah.
Alcohol and drugs and wives and people like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know the wife thing would help, but.
Yeah, it was just cleaning day.
Alcohol and drugs too, really?
Cleaning day.
Yeah. Did you
go figure?
Well, when you wrote like all the songs on "Hi, My Name Is Johnny," did you were you on anything?
No.
No, you were pretty clean. You're pretty clean.
I mean, I drank a lot back then. I was like 19, you know.
Yeah.
You were.
Did you call yourself the Amazing Johnny Polonsky?
Yeah, that came from. Remember in Pee Wee's Big Adventure when they were having the meeting downstairs in the basement, in Pee-wee's basement.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
There was like an old guy with the mohawk. Yeah. Is there something you care to share with the rest of us, Amazing Larry? I thought it was right. Incredible. This one was called Amazing Larry.
and he was being browbeaten. By...
Plus, he was this 80-year-old guy with a fucking green mohawk. So I was making these tapes. I would... I took like these 4-track, you know, home demos and had a friend go after hours to, remember Acme Music? We can talk about it now.
Yeah.
That place in Chicago, he worked there. So he would go after hours and dupe all the tapes and steal them and just like make me like 100, 200 cassettes or whatever. And I went to Kinko's and made the copies and, you know, I was like, oh, I have an album, so I better like call it something, you know.
Yeah.
Other than my name, so I called myself the Amazing Johnny Polonsky. It sort of stuck.
That's great. And you are amazing because you played all, did you play all the instruments on that album?
Uh-huh. Oh, shucks.
Jesus.
Yep. But and no, I don't know.
And you did my book, I'll plug my book.
Yeah,
plug Trent. It. The world's first musical graphic novel. Mm-hmm. Didn't really do a lot of research on that, but I assume it's the world's first.
We can
first.
Call it that. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard of any others? Jeez, maybe. It looks like you might.
No? I don't think so.
Jesus, you really so. Had to think about
Where's
it.
Where's this? Isn't there like an accompanying CD? Or do you have to go? Is there like a link?
It's a link.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Hot no links. One has CD players anymore. I don't. I have one in my car. That's it.
I was considering getting back into CDs.
I'm into vinyl now.
So, yeah.
Because I'm a hipster.
Yeah, you look like it. Yeah. I've been into vinyl too. I got a really shitty record player though.
Mm.
It's like a portable, not like the one you'd have when you were a kid. Yeah. I mean, like the same concept, but it's yeah, just yeah. like for adults.
It's not a close and play.
It is a close and play.
It is?
It's
got the needle on the cover, on the inside cover?
No, not like that. But you
that's
can,
a close and
you
play.
Can remove the lid.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's like the adult version. I got it from Amoeba for like... $125 or something.
Right.
It doesn't sound very good.
Have you ever seen those that, like the little Volkswagen vans that drive around your record and they have a needle in them? Yeah. I was listening to this podcast, Bob and Ron's Record Collection.
Yeah.
I think it's called a record club, record collection. And they're really funny. And but they were talking about like they'd like love a real high tech one of those.
Yeah.
But it kind of works.
Like life size.
It's so dumb though. Yeah. No, not life size, but like high tech where it would sound really amazing. Because you know, it's literally driving on. Like in circles on your L.
Very cute. Is right. That like a Volkswagen?
Jesus, that was condescending.
Yeah, moving on. Is that like a Volkswagen promo thing?
I think so, maybe. Or, yeah. Or it's a promo for a record? I don't know. For like
not
a,
bad.
Like a turntable?
I don't know.
Is there an auto company that also makes turntables?
Didn't they used to have like you could have a 45 player in your car. Remember that? Like
yeah, that was back in the 50s. Yeah, I only know that from Diner. I saw that in Diner.
Oh, I haven't seen that in a long time. Man, I was obsessed with Mickey Rourke growing up. He's still kind of incredible in a way, but like that, you know, him in the 80s.
Yeah, no, he was great.
Yeah.
Pope of Greenwich Village.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Burt Young. Remember Burt Young?
Oh, yeah.
Burt Young. Bedbug Eddie.
That old guy, right?
Yeah. He was Bedbug Eddie, and he was in...
He was in Rocky, right?
He was Talia Shire's brother. What was his name?
Yeah.
I forget his name.
I worked with him on Louis's show, Horace and Pete. He was... I think he might have done a day or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or no. It wasn't on that. It wasn't on that. It was on the Triumph show.
I was doing. Was he cool?
He seemed cool, yeah. He was a little old.
Well, that's what happens.
Old. Yeah. You know, a little lost. I mean, I'm getting a little lost.
He was great in Chinatown. Remember, he played the guy that Jack Nicholson went down
that's
to San Pedro.
That's one I have to see again.
Shit, it was great. I saw the Million Dollar Theater a couple years ago. They showed it.
Holy shit, I can't afford this. Yeah.
Well, you know. It comes and goes.
But where were we?
Just bullshitting. Volkswagen, vodka. Records.
No, this has to be, it can't be Skull Juice. I gotta focus, god damn it.
You don't need to focus.
Songwriting, I care about it.
Well.
Well, then be better.
I don't know. I've written songs high before. I don't know if I've written anything drunk. I'm trying to remember.
It seems like your songs are very concise and, you know, they're well written. They're like monkey songs.
Some of them, I got a ton of songs.
I mean, I'm talking about like my name is Johnny.
Yeah, the first record, yeah, that was all like, I wrote all of that when I was 18, 19.
Jesus.
A bunch of them I wrote in Chicago. Some of them I wrote when I was living in Boston. I went to Berklee College of Music for a year. Mm-hmm. My aunt came to, I'd quit school. And my aunt from Boston came to visit.
Yeah.
She's like, why don't you go to Berklee? You know,
wow.
I was like, I just want to get out of town. So, you know, I went there. And I guess it's supposed to be a good school now, but it was a dump back then. But I just sat around and smoked weed and listened to Pavement Records and, you know, wrote songs. But I wrote a bunch of songs there. And I remember just like, a lot of it was reacting to what was popular at the time. Like at the time, I really loathed Stuntable Pilots and bands that had songs that were like 4 or 5 minutes long. Bands that I like a lot now, but at the time, you know, you're 18, whatever, you have like super hard opinions. But so I wanted to write songs that were like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And,
that's what mine are now.
Yeah, no, you know,
but I just kind of ran out of steam.
Yeah. Well, plus at the time, you know, it's funny too. Like at the time, I remember, you know, I was, you know, you're a different person when you're a teenager. And like, I remember just like I really felt if I was going to say something, like I wanted to make sure that there was nothing that people could criticize me about. If it was so short.
Hey,
what was that?
Whoa, fuck you, over? It only took 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little medicine.
You can't say there's like too many solos or too many. It's only like one verse and, you know, repeat it 2 times.
Yeah.
Second verse, same as the first.
Like Get Happy.
Mm. Get Smart.
Yeah, you got smart.
I'm disguised as a pre-chorus. Don't sing me.
Now, do you, it might be always different with you, but do you start with a theme for a song in your head, like a thematically or musically or just
I don't know,
it's
usually
lyrics?
Just chords.
Yeah.
It's usually just like on guitar, it's like messing around and come up with a melody. And sometimes like words will come. Every once in a while, like once or twice I've had an entire song come, like words and melody and everything.
Yeah.
But usually it's like a chord progression, kind of a groove,
yeah,
and a usually the melody and maybe a chorus. So it's like partial. Like it's enough to go on that gets me excited. But especially back then, like I was consciously trying to copy things, mm-hmm. which I don't really do so much anymore. I mean, it always happens. Like, you know, stuff comes out and I can pinpoint it and go, oh, I think it's that, but in a different key or whatever. But yeah. like, you know, like when you're starting out, or when I was anyway, like I would hear someone's song and go like, oh, I wish that chorus was actually the verse or vice versa. And I would like take it. I would just like take their exact chords and do something else with it.
Right.
And a lot of people, for some reason, seem like really like shy about that. But I don't know. Like, what? I just steal it. Like, what are they doing with it?
I mean, I think like there's only so many variations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well just steal something that you
like. And you know that old quote: "Good artists borrow and great artists steal."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I do know that. Do you believe in it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you just do it. Do what you feel like doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know.
Well, it works.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, you know, like to me, like if you're going to steal something exactly, you do something different with it.
Yeah, I always obsess. I get the yesterday syndrome, even though...
The song yesterday?
Nothing I've ever written is that good. But, you know, he thought this has got to have been done before.
Oh, yeah.
And he asked George Martin. He's like, no, I think... Because he dreamed it or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Scrambled eggs.
Yeah, and then he made it scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
I love scrambled eggs.
He should have left it scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
He could have been the Ruddles before before there were Beatles.
Yeah. I was listening to the Ruddles the other day. My friend hadn't heard of them.
I love them because I hate parody, but they just stylistically parodied.
They really didn't good. Those
they
didn't great
they're
tunes.
Not weird Al Yankovic-ing it, you know?
No, I mean those, and plus like it sounds like those records, you know, that like they really
it's just got it, that feel.
Almost an homage.
Yeah, but it's not like Bleak loves you, plaid, you know.
Let's be natural.
Yeah.
Cheese and onions.
Yeah, cheese and onions.
They're great tunes.
Yeah.
Good melodies.
Scrambled eggs.
Scrambled eggs. But I don't know. Like I was really into like a lot of old rock and roll then too. I mean, I still am, but like back then I was super obsessed with it. Just like Gene Pitney and, you know, early Stones and Roy Orbison and, you know, like all the early rock and roll tunes that still, like, you know, it wasn't quite like Chuck Berry, where it was R&B based, like more melodic.
Can you give an example of, hey, I love that, that should have been the chorus or that should have been the verse?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
I need more caffeine. I don't know.
you just can't remember, or you don't want to expose yourself.
You mean one of my songs?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, let me think. Well, the end to "Love, Lovely Love" was ripped off from Paul Westerberg. You know, from the Replacements. He had his first solo record, 14 songs. I had a song, "A Few Minutes of Silence."
Can you play a little bit of that? And then
I mean, that song.
I got picks over there if you need picks.
There's a lot of great songs on that record. That one wasn't one of my favorites, but like I forget, it's like a. That's how he ends
right.
it.
Yeah.
And my song ends.
Like, yeah, but
why
come
not?
On, a million
songs. I mean,
songs.
You know, well, you asked, so I'm telling you.
No, I'm glad. Thank you. But I'm just saying, don't worry about that one.
I'm not worried.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're not worried at
all. I feel all right.
I'm just looking out for you, buddy.
Let me think. Any others?
What's the song that you recorded after you screamed into a pillow because you wanted your voice
you like
really
that story.
Torn up?
Yeah, that was Evil Scurvy Love.
Yeah.
That one. That was like a... Well, that one, you know, that's pretty much like, I think I wrote it around, what was that Tom Petty song?
Right, what is that?
You're So Bad.
Oh, yeah.
And mine is, so it's kind of that groove.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like,
was that about anything specific, or was that just like, are your songs, do they come from emotion, or are they like, oh, you know, I'd like to write about... I remember being brokenhearted, but I'm not brokenhearted right now.
I mean, I was like 19. There was a girl I was seeing at the time that it was sort of vaguely about, but it's at that time it was more just like I was so in love with the craft of songwriting and really trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
That there was like a little bit of catharsis, I guess, but mostly it was just like I cared more about the Kinks than I cared about her. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was just more interested in that.
So, yeah.
Just learn how to write a song.
So you stopped your sobbing.
Yeah. And, I mean, now, like, songs are, you know, all sorts of things. Like, sometimes it's super cathartic and, like, a diary entry, and sometimes it's just playing with words, and sometimes a combination, and...
Yeah, that's. I'll write a song and a girlfriend will go, now who's that about?
Yeah.
Like, well, no one, or maybe everyone at
Don't
the same
time.
Don't
you hate that?
Yeah.
I hate, like, being asked what it's about.
Yeah.
I mean, in, like, an accusatory way.
Yeah, in an accusatory
like,
way.
But, you know, like, I think it's interesting, like, hearing people's interpretations.
Yeah.
That's one reason, like...
Yes,
like,
definitely.
Now my songs are a lot more, I don't know if it's, I don't know, hopefully not opaque, but, like, more, I don't know, just, like, less straightforward.
You know what I kind of like is, I like... When,
I like being able to interpret stuff.
Yeah, I like that too. But and this is kind of a shallow version of that. I like it when people hear my songs and get the words wrong, and they're like, "Hey, those are kind of interesting words."
Like what? What do they think it is?
Dad, sit down. The song here. Can I? Have
yeah, yeah.
You probably remember it, but
I don't have a pick.
I got a pick. So it's about. Being bisexual.
I remember this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't stand up for all the I could never go right into it from in
hey,
the
man,
chorus.
Take your time. I got time.
Yeah. Elizabeth, your misery of God. That's it. That's it down because I'm in love. That's it down because I'm in love with the guy. I'm not that gay, but I'm in love with the guy. No, I'm not straight. Yes, I'm bi. That's it down. Don't stand up for all those things you stood before. Don't stand up for any of that bullshit anymore. Don't stand up, but there's a nice chair I found. That's it down. So someone wrote me and said, I love that song, Dance It Down.
Dance It Down?
Yeah, and I'm like, hey, those are cool lyrics. You should write that.
Yeah.
Dance It Down.
Dance It Down.
That would make a good song on its own. Then I wrote a song. See, sometimes this podcast turns to about me.
We're just talking, man.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
People tuned in for you, though. Where I heard this Pete Townsend song.
Yeah.
Fuck. Can't remember.
One of the Solitons?
Yeah.
One of the ballads or a rocker?
It's kind of
Rough
kind,
Boys.
It kind of rocks. It's from his. It's called his rock novel. Fuck, I'll think.
Oh, one of
it.
The later ones.
Yeah,
I don't know the later ones so well.
Safe. I am safe in a dream.
Yeah,
he says safe in a dream anyway in it. But I thought he was saying I am Saint Finity, which means the patron. I thought the patron saint of the finite. So, so then I wrote.
That's amazing. But there isn't really a Saint Finity, right?
No, there isn't. But I thought he made up a saint called. Because yeah. then I wrote the song Saint Finity.
Yeah.
Which goes like this. This is the chorus. You are impossibility. You are immortality. You are eternity. You're my holy trinity. And who am I to catch your eye? Yes, who am I to catch your eye? I'm good Saint Finity. Good and just Saint Finity. Well, I'm just Saint Finity. Then it goes in.
So you wrote the song.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I wrote something. I misheard a Buzzcocks song.
Uh-huh.
It was... this was like back in the day when I was like 19 or 20 or whatever for the first record. It was, what was it called? I Don't Know What to Do With My Life.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they were saying I Don't Know What to Dream at Night.
Right, yeah.
And it ended up being that. Because I needed that song was originally called My Humongous Cock.
Yeah.
It had totally different lyrics. And when I was doing the demos with Frank Black in LA, I was living in Chicago and came out here. He suggested that I change the lyrics. Change it. You know, you might want to change the title to something that's not My Humongous Cock. And I remember that. I remember I'd misheard that song title, so that fit in perfectly, rhythmically.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was Yeah, sometimes, you know, you pick up ideas from anywhere, you know. I like hearing things.
Yeah.
You know about, like, people thinking that, you know, there's a bathroom on the right.
Right, yeah.
You know, like that.
What I thought it was like Dirty Deeds and the Dunder Chief. The Dunder Chief.
What's a dunder?
I don't know, like a dunderhead. Like, but the king of dunderheads, the Dunder Chief.
Saint Dunder.
Saint Dunder Chief.
Yeah.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm sure there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, wherever you can get it.
I wrote a song with Tom Bell, who, I just would sing it to him, and he'd do the chords, and it turned out to be a good song, but I was watching... I feel like I was watching Jacques Cousteau or something, and he was talking about this island. It might have been the Galapagos, although I don't think. But he mentioned, and I didn't know if I misheard it or not, and I never looked it up again, but he said, there was an evolution explosion. And that just made me laugh. Like, the slowest thing in the world that you could think of, evolution. There's an explosion of it. So we wrote a song called Evolution Explosion.
I thought you were telling me that watching Tom Bell play guitar was akin to watching Jacques Cousteau go down deep. Tom was really getting deep.
And French.
Yeah. I am the unknown. I live the unknown.
So where are your songs going now? Are you doing a specific type of... I haven't heard in a while.
I put out a record a couple years ago. I don't know. I've written all kinds of tunes, you know, some you can just play with a guitar, piano, and sing. Those to me always feel like the most solid. And some are more like tracks or whatever, like kind of a riff, and you sort of need the whole band to make it work. I tend to gravitate towards just like, I don't know, like I grew up on like Tom Petty and The Replacements and Nirvana and Neil Young and, you know, just guys with a guitar that who write a song and then bring it to the band.
Right, that's an interesting point. Like, when you write a song, are you thinking of the whole band when you write it? I know it's probably different.
Yeah,
every
I
time
mean,
you write it, but what are you doing mostly?
I don't know. Like I think about that probably more than I should now. You know, like instead of just doing whatever you feel like doing. Like, I don't know. Like, because I think more in a context now than when I was a kid. Like, when I was a kid, like, all I wanted to do was, like, learn how to write songs. And you know what I mean? Like, when you're a teenager or whatever.
I couldn't even believe I could write a song.
Oh, you know, yeah. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first time that happened, I listened back to it because I had, you know, four tracks since I was, like, 12.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Like, I mean, the first time that I actually liked it. The first time I was like, this is a really good tune.
Yeah, yeah. It's exciting. Yeah,
yeah, it's like... unbelievably thrilling.
Is your last song usually your favorite one for a while?
No, not necessarily. I mean, sometimes you hit on something where you feel like you're like doing something new for yourself, or like for me, like, I don't know about you or other people, but like a lot of times I'll there's something I need to I don't know how to say it, like there's something I want more of my life, my personality or something, and it's almost like using the songs as like a way to draw that out, you know, like the last record I put out, the songs are really like beautiful and kind of sad and sort of languorous and, you know, like,
and
really
you think
dreamy.
Then that's not how you are.
No, not necessarily, but I mean at the time, like, you know, it was like shortly after getting divorced and everything, and so it's like that's not how I felt, but that's kind of like how I wanted
to feel. Like, that's a like, good point, because I feel like, go ahead.
You know, like when you're like using it as a way to like calm yourself down or to soothe yourself or to like, you know, writing some, I mean.
I think that's what writing is in general, and maybe all art, like painting too. It's like Woody Allen, I brought it up at the last, with Robbie Fulks too, the last podcast, I think. That you try and make your creative world perfect because your real world isn't, you know, and just trying to.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have total control.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Option
it's total control.
In your life. Yeah, and I don't know. There's like a great Nina Simone quote or a little interview snippet that I saw recently where she saying that the artist is supposed to reflect what's happening in society. And I think the artist is supposed to do whatever the artist feels like doing, you know, like whether it's reflecting what's happening in the world or putting out something that you know, is has nothing to do with what's happening in the world. Like, one of my favorite writers is Mark Bolan, you know, T-Rex. I mean, yeah. I still, I guess it's sort of in my head, like that's one way I write, is like
he, these he's writing about what he wants the world to be, right?
Or maybe he was just so odd. So
and high.
Maybe it was really what he was thinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or Jimi Hendrix, like all these people that I really love their music, and I wish they were still around making records. So I'll imagine, like, what would they be doing?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting one, right? So you do write that way a little bit?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah, like Kurt Cobain or Jimmy or Mark Bolan or, you know, John Lennon, like anybody. And, you know, I mean, obviously, like, especially with artists like those, like them, like, you would have no idea what they'd be doing. They probably would have no idea, but you know they wouldn't be doing what, you know, Jimi Hendrix wouldn't be, like rewriting Purple Haze, you know, 50 years later.
No, he'd be going on to something else. I do that with Mozart. Like,
really?
Yeah, Mozart. Mozart wouldn't be that good. Play like me. Play like me now.
Get us into the D chord.
He'd be so old. Couldn't even make a chord.
It's even older now.
Couldn't bar. Yeah. I don't bar.
Mm-mm. Fuck it. But so, I don't know, like, whatever it takes to, like, jog your imagination, you know?
Yeah.
Stealing, imagining.
All right, so you're talking about being really open and no rules. Are there rules that you follow in songwriting at all? I was talking to Robbie, and I actually played a song for him, and he critiqued it.
Oh, yeah?
And he was kind of harsh in some parts, and he said, you're changing the pronunciation of that word, that you shouldn't do that in songs.
I like when that happens.
Yeah.
Who does that? Like, I remember...
I brought up Jonathan. He's like, yeah, but he kind of does it for a joke. But I don't think he always does it for a joke. Jonathan Richman.
Oh, yeah. No, he... But that's part of his personality. He's like, you know, he's got that kind of cutesy, like, little boy.
Mine wasn't cutesy. Mine was fitting the melody.
Yeah.
You know?
I think whatever works. Like, I think rules are, you know, kind of ridiculous. Just whatever works for you. And, you know, one thing it took me a while to realize, too, is, like, it's one thing to have parameters. Like, parameters are great. Like, if you don't have parameters, then you have total freedom and total chaos. And, like, I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? Like, I need some kind of, like, okay, it's going to be whatever, like, you know, this feel or these chords, or I'm going to limit, I don't want to write a song that has more than three chords or whatever it is.
Right. That's just self-imposed rules just to make you more creative in some way.
But there's a difference between having self-imposed restrictions and thinking in your head, like, this is how it is and how it has to be, how it's supposed to be. It'll change all the time.
I was very susceptible to that. Like, when I first started writing songs, in fact, when I first wrote Trent, I remember I sang one of the songs to a friend, and she said, one of the lines was, that chilled off your spine. And she's like, you shouldn't make that two syllables chilled.
Chilled.
And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. So I made it chilled right off your spine, and I never changed it back. But come on, that's a dumb rule, too.
No
rules.
That
happens a lot.
I mean, I like that.
How about Oklahoma? You can't. That's not just, it's not Oklahoma where the wind, because then you got to go sweeping down the plane.
I mean, I think you got to do whatever you feel like doing. And if someone says to not do it, then you should probably just try it just to spite them and to irritate them.
I know, I was too nice back then. Now I'm going to spite.
I mean, you know, that's a motivating thing too. Like, especially more than when I was younger, is just like trying to not shock people, because, like, how shocking is, like, a song, really? But you know what I mean? It's like, but some people, like, take it real personally and get real freaked out. Like, you can't do that, or you can't. I recognize that from such and such. And
It's
like,
fuck you.
Yeah, you know. And I love making people feel really good, and I love making people feel really irritated.
Yeah,
you know.
But I'm not shitting on Robbie, because
because he's not here.
Well, no, not only that, because it made it interesting. It made it interesting that he was critiquing my song, and I was glad he did it. I'm glad he just didn't say, hey, yeah, that sounds great.
Well, I mean, it can be really helpful to have feedback from people whose opinions you respect.
Yeah.
Which is the key component.
Yeah, definitely.
Someone's opinion you respect.
Yeah.
Because everyone's got an opinion, especially these days.
And now I just take everything with a grain of salt. Like, I have some opinions, you know, I'll take. And some I won't, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it used to, like, drive me nuts. That's probably how it is when, you know, when you're starting out with anything, or especially when you're a kid. Just, like, you know, someone tells you you're incredible, and it, you know, it makes you feel great. And someone tells you you're shit, and you want to stop, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's part of just learning to not really, you know, it's
oh,
nice.
Oh, definitely. If someone came out and just said your songs are shitty, I would have, like, an hour of just, I got to quit.
Anybody?
Probably.
If anyone told you?
I don't know. but if someone like you did.
That wouldn't be very nice.
I guess, you know, someone on Reddit that could go fuck themselves, but...
Well, I mean, and yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, getting back to the first record, like making that thing, I was friends with Reckless Eric at the time. Remember that guy, Reckless Eric? The,
When I was a baby, my mama told me, son,
that's familiar, but...
I'd made friends with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was just like, you know, I mean, that actually, it's one I stole, too. That's from, like Love, Lovely Love was basically the whole wide world, you know, revamped.
Well, yeah.
But I was just totally in love with his records, and we had a mutual friend, and so we made friends, and we'd talk on the phone or whatever, and I remember... In the middle of making that record, at some point, he's like, I just want you to know that we're all rooting for you. And I was like, wow. You know, I was like 21 or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. You
know, because like it is, artists are vulnerable and sensitive and you want to be open and you have to be. And you don't want to like wilt every time someone gives you criticism.
And have you had like a big dry patch ever?
Big
like,
what?
Dry patch of songwriting where you just didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just like...
I guess relationships.
I mean, there's always, like, you know, some, like, chords or, like, I'm always working on something. Sometimes it's just, like, a deluge, and sometimes there's just, like, a couple of scraps here and there, little seeds.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think... I don't know if I've ever stopped writing, but there was definitely times when I would stop finishing the songs that I'd start.
Right.
And I didn't release records for a long time.
Sometimes it's good to put them away for a while. I've done that. I've come back to a lot of songs. And like I said last time, too, it's kind of like writing with a younger me, you know? Like
collaborating. And plus, if a song is really good, like there's no expiration date, you know? Uh-huh. Like that was something that used to freak me out.
Exactly.
Like, I would play with people and they would, you know, that song is like a couple years old. I remember that. I'd be like, well, I mean, first of all, like sometimes it takes a while for things to like really germinate.
Yeah.
You know, like I've written a bunch of songs like all over the years where like, you know, I'll come up with something and I can just tell that like I just need to like live more or something, you know,
yeah.
To like be able to either to like finish writing it or to just be able to perform it.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't even know how to date songs. Like when did I write it? Cause I wrote half of it in 1992 and the other half in 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. Neil Young put out a record like 10 years ago where one of the songs was 25 years old at that point or something
wow.
like that.
Yeah.
I remember reading about Billy Joel said he did the same thing. Like it would take him like, you know, 10 years to finish the chorus to some tune. And I don't think it matters, you know, just as long as it's good. Like who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like who cares where you get it from or how old it is or if, you know, if something is from when you were 10 or if it's just fresh.
I just got a Randy Newman record and there were some songs from like 1966 and the oldest were like when the album was made like 72
yeah.
And it was interesting to see they were all over all over the place.
Yeah, just what as long as it's good. Wouldn't you rather hear something good that is
yeah.
you know 20 years old than something that's mediocre that's brand new?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, me too.
Dumb question.
Sorry.
Do you like Randy Newman?
I do like Randy Newman. All I really know is the hits, you know.
Yeah. He's got
short people and out of LA.
I remember working on some show and this kid had headphones on. He's like, "What the fuck?" And just started laughing. He's like, "What the fuck is this?" And I'm like, "What are you listening to?" He's like, "This song called Short People."
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm like, "That's a weird reaction." He's like, "No way."
But I remember, wasn't he on Fernwood Tonight doing that song?
Probably.
Do you remember that show with
Martin
Mull?
Yeah.
I remember seeing Short People performed. I can't remember if it was Fernwood Tonight or if it was like SNL or something.
Or actual Carson.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could have been on Carson too.
I remember the last night of Carson. I saw Spinal Tap on the Friday night, Johnny's last show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they came out and then they broke into the Tonight Show theme. And they're all like excellent musicians,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's not just Big Bottom. Like they fucking are like
right.
doing this, like, you know.
Bottom.
Or whatever, how it goes.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, and, you know, Harry Shearer's like, he's just like walking on the bass and it's like, wow, they can really play. But that was hilarious.
Did you hear that the Fernwood Tonight theme is the Tonight Show theme played backwards?
Is that for real?
Yeah.
Or is that
like
a wives' tale?
Like, no, like, I think it is. Like, da 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 da.
I don't remember the Fernwood Tonight theme.
That's how it goes. Dun 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 Dun-dun-dun.
Oh, yeah.
Dun-dun-dun. And set up.
I never heard about that.
Yeah. Well, I swear to God, it's true.
What's Martin Mull doing? What do you think?
I don't know. He's got to be
about him?
Really old.
He's got to be more than like 70.
I don't hear about him.
I love Martin Mull. Did you ever see Serial, that movie with Martin Mull and Tuesday Weld, Peter Boners?
No.
Christopher Lee?
No. Jesus.
Oh, it's great.
Insane.
It takes place in the 70s.
Same
it's,
cast.
I love that movie since I was like 10 years old. It's like a satire, not like hokey, tongue-in-cheek, but like it's like a, you know, a satire of the like the so-called spiritual scene in Marin County in the 70s. And he plays the only kind of straight, you know, businessman that's, you know, turns out to be the only like sane person there.
Oh, wow. Bill Have you Macy. Ever written a song about that movie?
No.
Trying to pull it back in.
Songs. What else we got?
Who are there any like songwriters that you love that you're nothing like that you would never like?
That's an interesting question. I love King Crimson. I love the Adrian Belew era. And that's actually a big inspiration. I don't know how to explain it exactly, but there's like certain artists that just make me think differently somehow.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've written anything. Well, there's been a couple of newer ones that might be somewhat Crimson-esque, like different, you know, strange time signatures and stuff
right.
like that. But people like, you know, Frank Zappa or King Crimson or
yeah, Frank
John
Zappa,
Zorn.
I couldn't even get my head around.
I mean, there's a lot of artists that I really love that I find really inspiring. Timonda Galas, I just bought. Do you know her? She's
no.
an incredible singer. She's been around for 30, 40 years. She's like the Jimi Hendrix of operatic, demonic singing.
Yeah.
She's coming to town. She never tours. I just bought a ticket. There's a lot of people I find really inspiring that have nothing to do, you know, you couldn't tell just from like,
yeah,
from what I write. But I get bored with myself, you know, and I was thinking about this the other day, like there's a part of me that always feels like anything I write is going to come out sounding like Tom Petty or Kurt Cobain or whatever. Even if it doesn't, like somehow in my head.
But
like
everything Tom Petty writes sounds exactly like Tom Petty.
Well, he's earned that right. He's earned it.
I know. I mean, I love Tom Petty, but he hasn't changed his style one bit, right?
I guess it's all pretty like roots-based, yeah. You know, like early rock and roll and, you know.
Like he's not an experimenter.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I'll do, you know, like in my head, like I'll think something needs, you know, it's like too plain or sounds too much like this person or that person. Or I need to like jog my imagination somehow. So
have you ever written
like,
with anyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, nothing that I've ever recorded or not for my own stuff, but like I've written with other people, you know. That's fun. It's got to be the right combination, though.
Do you think that helps
like
you
work.
When you go back and write on your own?
I don't know. I mean, I think everything is, every experience is like, feeds into it somehow, if only just to distract you, you know, when you get back to doing your thing and being fresh.
Yeah.
I used to do a lot of sideman work, like playing other people's bands, and I learned a lot about, you know, about music and playing with people and just, I really like it in a way, like adjusting to someone else's, it's easy, like, you know, here's this person's world and I just kind of fit into it. I know what the vibe is and I just do what's appropriate. Because it's harder to like build your own world and be like, okay, I can do absolutely anything. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's more fun, like playing with other people and trying to fit in with them, but it's way more gratifying, like doing my thing and just making it happen.
And you played with Neil Diamond.
Mm-hmm. That was an easy world to fit in. I listened to him since I was a little boy, you know?
And you know, I mean, he's still Neil, but his songs, you know, he's definitely writing old man songs, you know?
But he always did, even when he was, like, 25.
Yeah.
You know? But they're not old man songs. They're just, like,
well, I mean, they're
simple,
just kind of slower, yeah, and slower introspective songs than he...
Yeah, especially on that record, 12 songs. But that was an incredible experience. That was super surreal. I remember driving to the studio. It was pouring rain out and I was really late and nervous and I get there and Neil hadn't gotten there yet, but Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, he was there and I introduced myself So, hey, I'm Johnny. Like, nice to meet you. And he's like, what's your last name? I told him. He's like, oh, yeah, I got your first record. That's a real good record.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. You know what I mean? That just, like, blew my mind that, like, anybody that I grew up listening to, like, even knew about it. So that was wild. And then Neil gets there, and we, you know, we played for, like, a week. It was Mike Campbell playing guitar, Smokey Hormel playing bass, and Benmont from Petty's band playing piano. And I remember the first tracks, like putting on the headphones, and like Neil Diamond's like sitting over, you know, 20 feet away. Yeah. You hear that voice in your head, in the headphones. Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's like, it's distracting, you know? It's like hearing, you know, Abraham Lincoln speak or something. Or actually, I don't know what it sounds like. You know, like whoever, like Freddie Boone Washington, I don't know.
FDR or Kennedy.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that's an actual guy.
Yeah.
But after, you know, you're just like, ah, don't worry about it. It's like, you just play.
Yeah.
And that's a thing, too. It's like, I've had a few of those experiences. I mean, the same guys, but we played on the last couple Johnny Cash records, and
that's got to, well, you talk about that.
Yeah, you go into that, and it's like, how can you not have expectations or be, like, a little nervous or be like, okay, this is historical, because they're, like, literally
explain to everyone, you were playing with Johnny Cash posthumously.
Like, yeah, he'd recorded all his tracks, and we were... And some of them were just him and guitar, and some were him and another band, and we were like replacing the tracks.
Yeah.
And that was surreal, you know, hearing that voice in your headphones. And, you know, we did like 60 tunes in 4 weeks, like blazed through like several albums worth of songs. Wow. But it's just playing music, you know, like when people are really good, it's super easy. The only thing getting in the way is just like oh, I can't believe it's such and such, you know, and then just forget that.
Well, getting back to Neil Diamond, I feel like he's a great songwriter. He could have, I mean, he was better when someone else did his songs back in the day. I mean,
those early ones are great. I love those records.
They just seem a little light and they need a.
Well, which ones are you talking about? You mean like Solitary Man and Cherry Cherry and.
Yeah, like... You know,
I think all those early songs are classic.
I don't know, just his voice was too Vegas-y for me, you know, back then.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you don't have to be sorry.
You're a great guitar player, too.
Yeah.
Everyone made him play rhythm guitar. He was kind of baffled by that, but he was playing rhythm guitar. He's a really good rhythm guitar player.
Who I also thought was Vegas-y was Jim Morrison.
Really?
Yeah. Come on, now touch me. That could have been a Neil Diamond song.
Yeah, that's a great tune. I always love that
one. I love that song, but, you know.
Yeah.
So what it would tell, I know the story, but Neil Diamond, what'd he say to you?
So
it's a great story.
So it's the end of the week. Everyone had gone. Neil was about to do a vocal. He was in the vocal booth. I was grabbing my stuff. And he goes, Johnny, is that you rustling in the background? Go, yeah, Neil, I'm about to leave. Thank you for everything. He comes out, shakes my hand, looks me dead in the eye, and goes, baby, you're a real motherfucker. And I was kind of, you know, shocked when he said that. There was like a pause for a second. And he goes, in retrospect, I realized maybe he thought that I didn't know what that meant.
Oh,
like he was insulting
it.
Me. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, you know, of course I did, but it was just like, wow. But baby, you're a real motherfucker. And I mean that in the best possible way.
That you fuck your mother real good.
Oh, man, that was incredible. I was like, thanks, Neil. I hope we get to work together again. And I got a speeding ticket on the way home. I was just like, wow.
Who gives a shit after that? Did you work with him again?
A couple years later for the following record. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if he must have been in the room for that.
Is that record as good?
Wait, I haven't listened to it as much.
Yeah.
I didn't play on all of it either. Well, I didn't play on all 12 songs, but we recorded a lot of tunes. I think that Home Before Dark, there's some beautiful songs on that. I don't really know the whole thing, though. But yeah, he's Neil Diamond, man. He's you know, beyond compare.
I love him. I'm just, I felt like I had a criticism.
Everyone's Vegas now. Billy Idol's in Vegas.
That's true. I mean, once you get old,
Cheap Trick,
where else is there to go?
Elton. I like that idea. I kind of want to go to Vegas, you know. Wouldn't that be kind of fun? Just like sit, you know, have your own theater and just have your show.
Oh, man. I was saying this the other day that I just want to play. I don't even want to get paid.
Mm.
I mean, I guess it would be nice if I didn't have to do anything else. But There's a story about Jonathan Richman when he went to New York. He just wanted to play anywhere, and finally he just got frustrated. This is when he was like 15 or 16. Sleeping on couches, and he just went on the top of the Hotel Albert and started playing, and a crowd gathered, and he got really excited until he found out they were waiting to see if he was going to jump.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I met him when I was like 18. Did I tell you that story?
Oh, yeah.
I said, I mean, that was one of the reasons I made those early tapes, was I just wanted an excuse to talk to my heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Jonathan Richman. I remember seeing him, I'd give him a tape at the Lounge Acts in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's an awesome show, just him by himself before he had that drummer for Tommy Larkins.
Yeah.
And I go up to him afterwards, and he looks at me and goes, "You know something? You look a lot like I did when I was your age."
You do.
I really did.
Yeah.
When I was 18, you know, when I met him, I looked exactly like the photo of him on the Modern Lovers cover.
Yeah.
And then a couple years later, I met him in Boston. I was going to school there. And I like broke past the people, you know, guarding him backstage, whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, "Hey, what'd you think of that tape?" He goes, "I remember it. I didn't like it." and I go, "Why not?" He goes, "It didn't come from here." He's pointing to his chest.
Right, yeah.
You know.
So where do you think it come from? Your dick or your head or what?
It was probably the dick.
Yeah. Do you think back on, "I wish I could gave him the real Jonathan-y songs"?
Nah.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I met him because, you know, I got him on Conan for the first time, and I'm such a big fan. I think I gawked and followed him around, and I think he got a little creeped out by me.
Well,
I remember asking him, "Hey, so what was To Hide a, you got a song called To Hide a Little Thought. What was that little thought?" He's like, "Oh no, what are you, crazy? Why would I tell you the little thought that I don't tell in the song?"
Shit.
Yeah.
I like obsessing about people, you know?
Yeah. No, I hate meeting my my heroes because I'll either, you know, creep them out or...
Did you have bad experiences?
Or yell at them on coke or something.
Well, you had a great Iggy story.
Iggy was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote Iggy when I was 19 or 20, something like that. He wrote me back. That's like my prized possession, a letter from Iggy.
Mm. Yeah.
He blessed me, too.
He did?
Yeah, a couple years ago, I was playing with Juliette Lewis, so playing in her band. We played at a... What's that festival called?
Yeah,
in Japan.
Outside? Oh.
No, we went to... It's like north of Tokyo.
Oh.
Wow. Fuji Fest, Fuji Rock.
Much, much farther than I thought. I thought the Sunset Junction thing.
Like Fuji Rock, opening for the Stooges. And after the Stooges, you know, I was like backstage with like
God
maybe 15 other people. And that was incredible watching, you know, the Stooges play in front of like 100,000 people out, you know, the full moon shining down. It's like beautiful. It was incredible in the forest. And so Iggy comes backstage and he's like all sweaty. He's got his shirt off. He's got like waving his towel. He's going, "Bless you. Fucking bless you. Bless, fucking bless you."
His sweat?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I got blessed by the Iggy.
Yeah, I'd be grossed out by anyone's sweat but his, I think.
Yeah. Bring it on. I don't know.
So I was thinking, like, Paul Simon got into songwriting, he said, because he heard Earth Angel. And he was a kid, and he's like, "Whoa, Earth, an angel, an angel on Earth." Like, something really simple and dumb like that.
Yeah.
But it really hit him. Was there, like, a moment like that for you? Or was it just listening?
Well, when I was five, my parents had a pretty big record collection. I remember, you know, they'd have, like, Walter Carlos and like all, you know, whatever, like, you know, Switched on Bach and like all these different records. But it was and they had the blue and red Beatles, you know, the 60 whatever, 62 to 66. And
Yeah, I have that.
The red one, I just totally fell in love with that when I was like 5 years old. I remember listening to She Loves You just over and over and over. And it was a few years before I started playing and writing, but I just, you know, those memories where like you feel like you can still like step back in them and they're actually still happening.
Yeah.
It's like that. I remember like my mom at the foot of the stairs yelling at me to go to school, and I was just like playing She Loves You one more time. And I just remember thinking, like, I knew it was four guys in the band, but I just wanted to make that sound. And I wonder if that maybe had something to do with my learning to play all the instruments,
right,
or being interested in that.
That's interesting.
Because I just wanted to make that sound. Like, I didn't really put it together that it was just like chords and melody and words and a guy on a guitar bringing it to a group of guys making it to a record. It was just like, oh, here's this sound happening. I want to do that too.
Right. You didn't even know what to picture.
Yeah. But
that's why I started playing. That's a great way to learn. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I started, I wanted to play guitar, but my hands were too small. So my fourth grade teacher, who Mr. Spangenberger. He used to every Friday
we'll
afternoon.
Get back to that.
Every Friday afternoon, he would whip out his guitar and he like play us, you know, like John Denver tunes and whatever, just like folk songs and pop tunes. And I was just like so into it. It was like crazy. And I wanted to play guitar, but my hands were too small. So he told my parents to get me a baritone uke. And incidentally, that's what Jimi Hendrix and Chrissy Hynde started on.
Really?
Which is just the top four strings of the guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can learn, you know, basically guitar chords and apply it later to the guitar when your hands get big enough. So I did that. All I wanted to do was play Monkees tunes and Beatles tunes and, you know, Duran Duran. And I wouldn't buy records, strangely. Like, I'd buy sheet music. I'd go to Kurt Zafir on Green Bay Road in Wilmette and you know, buy, like, Hungry Like the Wolf or, like,
that's
She's
great.
Sexy and yeah. 17 and, you know.
Yeah. Can you read notes? Man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, that was much later, though.
Yeah.
I learned to read, maybe a year or two later.
How much do you think that helps and how much do you think it hurts?
It depends on what you want to do. You don't need to do that. If you want to just write rock songs, all you need to do is like learn some chords and just go to town.
Because sometimes I feel like I wrote more interesting songs when I didn't even know how to play the guitar. I would just write.
Oh yeah,
lyrics.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
because you don't know what's possible and what's considered vulgar and what's considered anything. You're just doing stuff and just so it does get harder, I think, in a way. But that's just all mental attitude. You know, just forget it. Like we were talking earlier, like you just do what you feel like doing. And
yeah,
to me, that's the hardest part, is just like breaking through whatever it is, like self-doubt or just, you know, wondering what other people are going to think or any of that shit. Just like forget that. But I'm glad I learned how to read, and I was in the jazz band and an orchestra. My mom maybe play percussion in the concert band and orchestra. First of all, it's an incredible feeling, just like being part of like,
I know.
A huge...
I think it's just sour grapes with me. I think I want to know all that shit.
So, I mean, for me, it was kind of helpful, just like being able to like read jazz charts, stuff like that. Just not the style of music, but just like for me, like I'll picture. It might be one reason why it's really easy for me to learn songs.
Right.
But I don't think it's necessary at all.
That's what I want to hear.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because music's just a language. You know, you don't have to learn how to read it to be able to speak it or understand it.
Like, since you know how to play fucking everything.
Yeah.
What do you write songs on different instruments to get different?
Not usually. Feel? I've written a couple on piano, but actually a couple of the last record I wrote on synth, just from like having the sound.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that I actually really like is, and it keeps me from writing too many chords. You know, when you have like, I love the sound of the guitar, but I don't know, I'll go through phases where I'm just really not, it's just kind of boring to me, you know? So yeah. I have this synth and just playing one chord, it's like, oh, it's like kind of soothing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can just do anything with, I love like writing like two chord songs. I've got a bunch of those.
Yeah, I do too.
One chord, two chords.
It's actually hard to write two chord songs. Like, you kind of want to go to another one sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went through a long phase of writing songs with way too many chords. I can't even remember them. And just, you know, it wouldn't even repeat. Like, these sections that would sort of repeat, but, like, you know, everything was very, very complicated.
Yeah.
I think that was partly a reaction at the time to that first record, which was super, super simple.
Yeah.
And just like just being curious, just trying stuff.
Well, when it has that many chords, did you get a sound that was like, was it an easy tune to follow if you were kind of like singing along?
Sure.
Still? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been into, I don't know, I don't even know if I'm into melody. It's just sort of like, I think I'm just sort of wired that way.
Yeah, I think I am too.
Like, I love,
even though I don't have like good pitch or anything like that, but I, you know.
You don't need that. Yeah. Look at Lou Reed.
Yeah.
But no, I mean,
that's what I want to hear too.
You know, some of my favorite writers or some of my favorite bands, you know, like I love the Jesus Lizard, where there's not a shred of melody, or I mean, there's melody, but it's coming from the riffs, not from the singing. Or, you know, like I love like Public Image Limited and.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll listen to a Lou Reed song and sing the melody that's, he's not even singing.
Yeah. You but know. He's implying it.
Right, yeah, yeah. It's there. It's definitely there.
And, you know, it's not always about the melody, like that you're trying to communicate something, and like I remember reading he'd talk about how he was just trying to make it intimate, like he's talking to you in your ear.
That's an interesting, you know, because like, do you try and make your
and he had some incredible melodies, you know, like Who Loves the Sun, like
he
was an incredible pop songwriter.
Yeah, he just doesn't sing them. Like somebody else was singing.
You know,
he didn't sing Who Loves the Sun, did he?
No, that was the other guy.
Yeah, that was...
Or like, you know, Candy Says and...
Yeah, Candy Says is a beautiful song. Or Pale like, Blue Eyes.
Oh, man, amazing. Yeah. Or, you know, all the stuff on Transformer.
Yeah.
You know, Perfect Day, that's a great melody.
Yeah, I think
he was a great melodist.
Just trying to fuck it out of him or something.
I don't know. What, something worked.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was I going to say?
Sly Stone, he's another one that I love that... wouldn't really be able to tell.
Right.
Did you ever get into Sly?
No, I didn't. I'm not.
He's incredible.
I'm not. I think he's probably kind of jazzy bluesy, right?
No, he's like, just like, I mean, some of them are super melodic, you know, like Stan. But, you know, like, kind of funky.
That was for He Was a Jolly Good Fellow, right?
Yeah. You wrote that.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I do like Sly. For He's.
I don't know about songs.
No, are you kidding? You talked for like 54 minutes about it.
Roland's getting warmed up. You got like 4 more hours to go.
I know. Well, yeah, I got, you know, I don't have a lot of people lined up here. if you could
some content,
if you could point some songwriters my way for this podcast,
fuck them. You gotta find their own way.
Do you want to sing a song?
Sure. We want to hear.
I want to hear what you want to sing.
Okay. Let me think for a second.
And then I'll hear Scurvy Love.
Are you editing this thing, or is it just like going out
nope.
as is?
No, just the first couple minutes when we're talking about Andy Dick. That's the only part I'm that's the only part I'm editing out.
Incriminating. Shit, I'll just play. I can't think of anything else.
One still wants you today. I hope to hear you say that I am unable to ignore you below. But I still need you tonight. And I won't put up a fight. Though everything that means something has left me in mid-flight. So I am unable to resist your scurvy love. And I am unable to resist your evil love. And I am unable to resist. And I hope to hear you say that I am unable to resist your evil love. Yeah, I am unable to resist your evil love. And I am unable to resist.
Yeah.
And we were talking about stealing songs earlier. You know what that was, too, is like, you know,
yeah.
Just bounce it up.
Yeah, and it's different enough. I mean,
and remember that tune?
Yeah, yeah. So I always look at, you know, people playing. I look at their fingers while they're playing, you know. And what I've noticed about your fingers is they're polished.
Yeah.
They are, aren't they?
I got nail polish.
Or are they just
on.
Really shiny? Yeah.
I got nail polish.
Yeah. Does that help? Pick up girls or guys. Sorry, I don't want to be Archie Bunker here. What kind of fucking fruitcake are you?
Hey, man. What's wrong with makeup?
Nothing, nothing. I wouldn't wear it because, you know, Bunker. I mean, why polish this turd? But, you know.
There's a lot of reasons. Turn polishing. Is that the name of the podcast?
It should be. I'm trying to make myself a better songwriter. That's turd polishing. Is there a song that you're like, that everyone knows of yours that like you're most known for? Or?
I don't know. I don't really think like that, to be honest.
Well, I mean, do people come up to you? You don't have like a ministry of silly walks.
I guess
walks.
That one.
Like, Cleese, you know, he gets sick of people saying, do silly walk.
Probably know. Evil Scurvy Love.
Yeah, that one's, sorry.
That's all right. Hey, man. I like it. I mean, I love it when people, that's what you want, right? You want to put stuff out in the world and have people respond to it.
I think when I wrote Brown Booze, I was thinking of Scurvy Love because of what you did to your voice.
And yeah.
I remember singing it over and over again, thinking it's going to get better and better the more my voice gets like raw. And...
Yeah, yeah. What's Brown Booze from? Just a tune of yours?
Yeah. It's just when I, did I ever play for you?
No, you want to play it? Let's hear some Brown Booze.
I played it, a lot on this. On oh Jesus.
There's another.
And I probably played it for you, but who cares? Oh, I never should have gone brown. Did you see me on the way down? Turn my smile upside down. Never should have. Wait, sorry, I fucked it up. Oh, I never should have gone brown. See me on the way down. Turn my smile upside down. Never should have gone brown. Never should have drunk from that cup. Turn my frown right side up. Do I regret it? Yup. Never should have drunk from that cup. When I was young, didn't need booze. Wasn't accustomed to watch myself lose. Back then I had the luxury to choose. Oh, brown booze. Oh, brown booze. Brown booze, brown booze, brown booze. Oh, brown booze. Brown booze, I deserve to be your clown. Think I saw you on the way down. I was on the wrong side of town. Never should have gone brown.
You're a vodka man, yeah?
Yeah. But
every once in a while.
I'll drink brown and I'll fucking hit someone.
Once you go brown, yeah. Then you go down.
Then they hit me back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me try another one.
Yeah.
I got an idea.
Mr. Smarty Pants has an idea.
This is a newish one.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
distance. But when you're near me, can you feel me there? As once I was. If you listen, you can hear me in the dark.
Thanks.
I gotta replenish my Johnny Polonsky collection.
That one's not recorded.
Well, yeah, it is.
Well, now it is. I did it wrong. I fucked up the second chorus.
Your albums that I got last time, I had like three or four of them, and my laptop died and they're gone. I gotta get those again.
I'll get you those. You want to talk about like stealing songs or like inspiration or whatever? Like that. That one I just wrote a couple years ago, just sort of, you know, just messing around. But looking back, I can pinpoint things like, I love The Pretenders, especially those first couple records.
Yeah.
But like, did you ever get into them at all?
Yeah.
Remember that song, Up the Neck? It's like, anger and lust.
Yeah.
Abuse of facility. It's kind of the same, different key, right. But like same sort of groove. I mean, it's, you know, it's like a really folky, it could be anything, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like in your head, there's some kind of a focus. I need that anyway.
I got a song now that is bugging me that I feel like it's something and I can't tell what.
Yeah. I guess what I mean is like when I was starting out, like I needed that ahead of time. Like I needed something to consciously copy.
Right. You're unconsciously.
Yeah. Like I'll just mess around with stuff and I might vaguely think like, oh, it sort of sounds like The Pretenders, but like, you know, it's like a fucking G chord. Like who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it could be anybody doing anything.
Right. Definitely.
But it gives me like some kind of a trajectory and some kind of a focus of like, okay, like maybe I want to make it sound exactly like it, or maybe I want it to sound like my version of it. Or maybe I want to sound, maybe it's like a kind of pinpointed, it sounds like X, but I want to make it sound like completely different.
Yeah.
But it gives me something to respond to, I guess is what is the important thing. That's the thing that I find hardest, that it's weird. Like when I was, you know, starting out when I was younger, like I really wanted to do everything myself. And like, I couldn't, part of it was just like my personality at the time. Like I couldn't really open up like in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really trust myself. Like writing or in the studio or anything, like I had to do everything myself because I was just kind of closed up like that. I'm not like that anymore. It's almost the opposite, where it's easier for me to, I don't know if it's collaborating, but just like performing, like having somebody there.
Right, yeah. What was it like after you did Hi, My Name is Johnny and you did all that in the studio by yourself and then you had to tour with it, right? Like what was it like getting that band together?
That was easy. That was
because they just copied your parts. Or?
Not exactly. I mean, that's how I wanted it at first, but it just turned into something different, which at the time I wasn't into. But it was a great band. It was my friend, just guys from high school.
Yeah.
You know, I'm playing with the guy now too, Solomon Snyder. He played with Morrissey for a long time, and you know, we've been friends since we were eight. And this guy Joe Dapier, he went to high school with us too. It just so you know that came together easily. Plus, those were the days too where it was just like, you know, there's a lot going on. There's like, you know, lots of money and, you know, exposure and being on MTV.
Yeah, that was like the beginning of the end, right, for the record industry.
Yeah, that was like the tail end of the traditional, like, showbiz, big record deal.
But, yeah, when you get a band together and tour, you probably want it to be a little different. I went to see The Cars.
Yeah.
And it was like listening to the record. It was boring.
I know what you mean. I mean, some bands, I like that. Like, I've seen the Pixies. So,
Dylan goes too far. Like, I sat through all of, like, a Rolling Stone and didn't know it was like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck you. But then the Cars are the other end of the spectrum.
Fuck me?
No.
What would I have to do
then?
No,
Zimmerman.
Yeah. Like, one of my favorite contemporary bands is Nick Cave and the, mm-hmm. the Bad Seeds. And that's one of the reasons I love them is, like, it's always different. But it's not really that different. It's just the interpretation changes night to night. They function like an old school rock band, like a blues or jazz ensemble or whatever. They have that attitude. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be in time, and they all have a different conception of where the
right
downbeat
mood,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're really showmen. Go ahead.
I don't know, man. Those are incredible songs, and I love that kind of musicianship where it's really sort of, is shoddy a bad word? I like that. It's like
it doesn't sound shoddy to me, but to you, I can understand.
It's not, shoddy is the wrong word to use. It's like really in the moment and a lot of extemporaneous playing, and it's, they're not trying to be perfect. And it's just like a vibe, and they're trying to discover new things and keep themselves from being bored. It's not repeating the same thing every night.
Yeah, yeah.
That drives me nuts as a listener and especially as a player. I get bored really easily.
I hate rehearsing.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Like, the second time I have to do a song, I start forgetting the lyrics, the chords. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, you get bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, like, I aspire to have a band like the Jimi Hendrix Experience, where they didn't rehearse. They would just, like, go out on tour, and he's playing in front of, like, 20,000 people and trying a new song, like, the first song in the set.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's balls.
That would be exciting.
You know? And it's
the
same thing.
It would be too scary for me, but yeah.
You know, that's considered shoddy and unprofessional, like, by today's standards, but I don't like today's standards. You know, everything's...
I hate today's standards.
To a click, or everything's in tune, and, you know, there's a lot... There's always great stuff happening, but by and large, just, like, you know, everything's just trying to, like, promote a product, and
I did.
You don't get a feeling like it's a real, like, personal expression.
When I was
weird.
When we were recording the album, I did, you know, three takes, and we actually picked, like, some of the... Sometimes the worst take, where my voice breaks a little bit.
X has got the feel.
Yeah.
That's what
you
want.
Like, my voice breaks twice on the album. Like,
that's
almost embarrassing.
I mean, those are some of my favorite parts, though, of records, you know, when people make mistakes or...
There's a Breeders song on Pod where Kim Deal's voice breaks, and it's incredible.
Yeah.
It would be way worse.
But it's like, you know, I can understand when a great voice breaks, but my voice is just broken anyway. And then you take the broken, take the more broken part?
Maybe you're broken, and then you just sing.
Do you want to hear my song
I thought you'd never ask.
Like, what are you going to say? No, I don't want to hear it. It's my podcast. Where I'm trying to do a Nick Cave song.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I've succeeded, but I kind of hope I didn't, just so it's my own style. My pockets, and it's all I got to give. All my five deaths for you. I've added up all my coins, and I've counted on nothing but these five deaths for you. You. Tonight I'm gonna die. Five deaths for you. Them in one hand, and you lay them at your feet. All of the five deaths for you. You stroke them with your toes, and they shiver and howl, and they shudder and moan. Moan, 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 moan.
to spare. All of my treasures waiting forever, wait in the dark. For you to drive them out, drive them out, drive them out. Take me from this deep sleep. Wake me to the next. Wake me, wake me. Wake me, wake me. Wake me, wake me. Take 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 tonight. I'm gonna live 5 deaths for you. When I finally die, no one can deny they were 5 deaths for you. A knife is sharp, but still, its pain would not kill 5 times for you.
Like the what's that middle section? The take me, wake me.
Oh yeah, the take, take me, wake me.
Do that twice. It's like a cool middle eight.
Hey, leave the people wanting more. I'm gonna take that with a grain of salt.
All right. How'd you feel if Jonathan Richman asked you what the 5 deaths were? Would that offend you?
No.
No.
But I would say.
Did you tell him?
But I would say, fuck you. You didn't tell me.
Would you itemize them for him? Do you want to hear my version of a Nick Cave song?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. You can sing along too, you'll figure it out.
All right.
It's called Black Moon.
Black Moon.
That's,
already... how,
that's it. It's done. That's it.
Me.
record that one?
Nope.
That one's you got to record that one, man.
Well, I did that for what's that thing called? The those they record you live. You day trotter. You know what those?
No.
It's in like usually bands on tour in Southern Illinois will go into the studios and do that, but sometimes they do remote. I did that with my band a couple years ago.
Oh, wow.
It went horribly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they also, instead of posting a photo, they'll do a cartoon of your face.
And all nodes, right?
Yeah, well,
that's what it would be.
Here's the thing. It wasn't happening so well. The audio stuff was just like not up to snuff, so I asked for the tracks, and I think they took offense.
Oh, and they made it really
ugly.
They
made me look real bad. like teeth, like perpendicular from my face. I got a nose, but it's just like...
Yeah, I mean, every caricature is a big nose.
That's all right.
But, so where can people get your stuff?
The usual channels. There's iTunes and Spotify and Apple Music. Everything's up there. There's
Johnny
some stuff
Polonsky.
On johnnypolonsky.com, JonnyPolonsky, the website.
I'll put it up.
Has links, Facebook, Johnny Polonsky Music, the Johnny Polonsky Instagram. There's all the stuff, there's tons of videos on YouTube.
You know, we're getting a venue together at Starburns, and
we did
a few shows there. We should go by and check it out after this.
Yeah.
But it's really great, and we our band played there, and the sound is great. You should come either solo or with a band or
I'm down.
Whatever. Yeah. I want to get some comedy nights and comedy music nights together.
Cool.
You'll love it.
You played there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hal told me about it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I didn't bug you because you said you've been very busy lately and tired.
I was just working.
Yeah.
I would have come.
Well, we're going to have more.
Fuck it. I'm ready.
We did a lot. We could keep talking or we could end this goddamn thing.
What else you want to know? I'll tell you some stuff. We can end too. I don't care. We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, let's end.
Let's end it all.
I'm tired of talking.
I've had to blow my nose this entire time. So.
When you started singing, I started leaning over with my ear to hear better, even though I have headphones on. So
it's like
I
turning down the music
here.
When you're trying to find an address. Yeah. You turn on the music so you can see better. Well, I don't want to,
Well, thanks. No, this was great.
Plus, your glass is empty. We should go into the room.
I know. I think that's how all the podcasts end, when I'm done drinking.
Yeah.
In here. I got to move on. And plus, these guys got to go. It's President's Day.
Yeah.
They came in special for this.
We've already talked 86:36.
Yeah, really probably like 84 minutes because we cut out some shit that I didn't want everyone to know about Andy Dick. Yeah, so.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. That was great.
Right on.
Sing-songers. Worst title ever. worst show name ever. I go for the worst.
Song singers.
Well, song singers makes more sense. That's why I didn't go with that.
I like sing songers.
Bye.
Bye. Feral Audio.